Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. We thank you for being with us on a fine Wednesday around here. It's going to be a good day. It always is here aboard the mothership. As always, you can hit me up on the phones. A lot to talk about, especially after last night's Game 6 of the World Series with the decision to pull Blake Snell when he was dealing. 855-212-4CBS or on Twitter, DA on CBS. A big story also this week is what is going on in New England. What has happened to the Patriots after getting pasted by the Niners and losing to the Broncos consecutive weeks? And now they're in the middle of a three-game losing streak. Joining us here on the show, senior NFL writer from the Boston Globe, friend of the show. You can also watch him this morning. You can join us at watchda.com on the simulcast and on our Twitch channel. Go to the CBS Sports Radio channel there. Ben Volen. Ben, good morning. Good to see your smiling face this morning. What's up?
Not much, just straining my neck a little bit for the Patriots looking all the way up in the standings. Not used to having so many teams above the Patriots in the AFC East right now.
No kidding. Tell us, what do you think the biggest problem is, the biggest flaw right now is to the Patriots?
I mean, it's their quarterback play. No question. It's all about the offense right now. The defense isn't great. They got gashed by San Francisco, but they, you know, when the offense is going three and out every time. In the last 2 weeks against Denver, the phrase I keep using is non-functional. I mean, can barely complete a pass, can barely convert a first down. And it all starts with Cam Newton. Now, against Denver, we gave him a little bit of a pass. He didn't have any much practice last 2 weeks. This is a guy that's still new in the offense. So, yeah, it's understandable that some time off, his fundamentals would slip. He maybe doesn't see the field as well, but last week was terrible against San Francisco. He had 3 full days of practice. He's staring down receivers. He's not seeing the field. He's missing open guys. He's hesitant. He's not throwing with timing and anticipation. Cam Newton has been really the genesis of all their problems. If they have gotten at least representative quarterback play, they would have certainly beaten the Broncos and had a much better performance against San Francisco. So to me, it all starts with Cam Newton. You know, him getting COVID on that Saturday right before what was supposed to be the Chiefs game, it just really sent the Patriots into a tailspin. It messed up their schedule for the next 2 weeks. It took Newton out of the mix, and he noticeably has just been really off since he returned. So, to me, it's all about the quarterback play, and they just have not been getting good play from Cam Newton so far.
How do you explain how good Cam Newton specifically looked in Seattle in week number two to how far he's regressed a couple of weeks later?
Well, I do think Seattle's secondary played a role in it. I think that they are one of the worst pass defenses in the league. So I think a lot of teams are throwing for yards against Seattle. But, you know, I think defenses adjust. That's what happens in the NFL. They get a little film on the Patriots. And I think they also realize that Cam doesn't have great running mates. And they can st- stack the line of scrimmage, and they don't have to worry about getting beat deep too much, and so they can play the run a little bit more. They can defend the read option. So you haven't seen Cam taking off, and you just haven't seen the spacing on the field. It just everything's compressed right now. So to me, that's been the biggest difference is teams are getting they've seen the book on the Patriots. You know, other than Edelman, they don't really have a dangerous weapon on the field. N'Keal Harry has been a bust the last few weeks. Damir Bird is a journeyman receiver. He's been playing the most snaps of all the receivers. So the Patriots just don't have the weapons right now, and it's really compressing the field, and Cam can't get the ball to them downfield either. So it's a little bit of everything, but, you know, teams have gotten the book on the Patriots, and they've got to figure out a way to adjust now.
Ben Volen joins us, senior NFL writer from the Boston Globe. You just kind of mentioned some of the thin parts of the Patriots roster. Because Cam has been so bad, has that now exposed the Patriots' lack of talent at a lot of positions on the roster?
Yeah, and definitely. And the first couple weeks, you know, Newton's ability as a runner kind of masked the Patriots' deficiencies at some of those areas, especially week two against Seattle. I mean, he's throwing for 397 yards. And then, you know, week one and week three, he was their leading rusher. And it's this new offense for the Patriots, and they're running the read option and the zone read. And, you know, so much fun having a running quarterback in New England. And now they've adjusted. And the fact that they don't really have anyone other than Edelman who can get open is, a significant hindrance for them, no question. But guys have been open, too. I mean, you go back and you watch the film, and N'Keal Harry is open, and Edelman is open. And there are, you know, if Newton is able to just, like, take a quick drop back and get the ball out on time, there are guys that are open, but he's just staring things down so much. And, you know, it's funny. I've had a couple people ask me, is he still feeling the effects of COVID? There's something called a post-COVID fog, a cognitive, mental fog that some guys go through. And, Cam was asked about it, and I asked Belichick about it straight up, and both of them said, no, he's been fine. So we have to go by their word. But, you know, even a couple doctors have emailed me and said, maybe Cam is just not seeing the field right now because of effects of COVID. And so, you know, we don't know if that's the answer, but there's no question. He's just not seeing the field, and he's just standing like a statue back there. And he's missing open guys. So, yeah, they do need receivers that get better separation, and he does need better weapons. But guys are open, and Cam is just not seeing them.
You know, listening and watching his press conference post-game on Sunday, it was laborious. I mean, Cam Newton is trying to say the right things, and I give him credit for that. He's trying to do the Patriot way thing, take responsibility, not tip your hand too much. But he is clearly mentally on his own island right now. I don't know if he's overthinking things. I don't know if he's doubting himself. I'm sure you picked up on the same cues that he was showing that I was watching on Sunday after the game. Do you think the pressure of Brady succeeding, Belichick's coaching, a chance with the Patriots and all eyes on him is kind of pressing on Cam and maybe scrambling his confidence?
I don't know. I think if there was one guy who could handle being the successor to Brady, it is Cam Newton. He's just overflowing with confidence. He's someone who's been there and done that. He's been to the Super Bowl. He's won an MVP.
He doesn't look like he's overflowing with confidence in those post-game press conferences these days.
Well, he says, it's hard to have confidence when you get your butt kicked 33-6 and you get benched in the third quarter. And to your point, I give him credit, as you said, that he's at least taking responsibility. And after every game, he says, I played terribly, and it starts with me. I have to play better. And it's great that he's taking responsibility for it. But at some point, it becomes hollow. And it's like, okay, we get it. You need to play better. So time to start playing better now. I don't think it's a confidence issue with him. I just think it's someone who, you know, maybe his skills are eroding a little bit. You know, it has been 10 years in the NFL, and it's a very difficult situation for him. New team, new system, no off season, COVID season, you know, with very disrupted practice schedules. He had to sit out for a couple weeks. So I just think, you know, we're seeing how special Tom Brady was here in New England, that Tom Brady could play with these receivers and still win games, that Tom Brady could probably miss some days of practice and still play seamlessly on Sunday. Cam Newton can't do that. And so I don't think it's a confidence issue as far as, oh, no, I can't fill the seat that I'm in the role, and everyone, the expectations are too high. I just think, you know, he might be a declining player who's in a very difficult situation, and the Patriots and him are still figuring out ways to put him in the best position to succeed. You know, some of this is on the coaches too. Maybe they're not calling the right plays for him yet. So I just think it's turned into a mess right now. And, you know, it's part of the COVID season. Like I said, no practice, no off season. It's just a difficult situation for quarterbacks in new situations like Cam Newton.
Ben Folan joins us here from the Boston Globe, senior NFL writer. It's always so weird when you have challenging circumstances and the Patriots aren't the ones benefiting from that, because they're always so good when those things tend to happen. But the flip side is, if Cam Newton's not good, what's their other options? We've seen Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer on the field, and those guys aren't lighting it up either. We saw a hook from Belichick towards Cam at the end of this game on Sunday. I mean, do you foresee a situation where they just take the starting job away from Cam and make it either Hoyer or Stidham?
You know, if he continues to have more games like this, they'll have no option other than to go to Stidham, I think. But interestingly, Bill Belichick, who never answers anything definitively, always, you know, talks around every question. I asked him after the game, is Cam still your quarterback? He's like, yep, absolutely. You know, he squelched that right away. So I think that's a sign that Cam, as poorly as he's played, is still leaps and bounds ahead of Jarrett Stidham right now. And I definitely don't think the Patriots view Stidham as the answer. This is a guy that started the season as number three quarterback. He couldn't even beat out Hoyer for the backup. And they got Stidham a little bit of work last week, but, you know, he threw another pick. He kind of looks small out there. Maybe that's not a fair judgment by me, but he just doesn't – he looks a little undersized and looks a little small compared to the rest of the players on the field. And the Patriots don't have a great answer. This is the lot they've given themselves this year. They didn't really invest in the quarterback position. They let Brady go. They didn't use a draft pick. They didn't really sign anyone in free agency, and they just waited – for the last man standing, and they got Cam Newton for minimum money. So maybe you get what you pay for. They are pretty much stuck with Newton this year. Maybe Stidham down the road, he can get some starts, and maybe the experience helps him. But this is the lot they've cast for themselves, and I think they're going to have to go into the next offseason, you know, really looking for a quarterback, most likely in the draft. But there's no easy fixes here, and I think the only one they have is to try to get better play out of Cam Newton and hope that this is just a temporary rough patch.
Final question. Do you think they'll trade shutdown corner Stephon Gilmore before the trade deadline?
I think it's definitely on the table, and it's going to depend on which teams are needy and does the right kind of offer come their way. I don't think Gilmore will be on the team next year. I think it's heading towards a divorce. He's, you know, on the wrong end of 30 now, and he's still a terrific player, but he's their best asset. And for a team that's rebuilding, I think if he can fetch you a first-round pick or maybe even a second-round pick, I would do it. They've had some issues with his contract this year. Understandably, it's just business. A guy who wins NFL Defensive Player of the Year is going to want a pay raise, and they did give him a pay raise, but I don't think he's going to be here after this year. So if they can get a suitable offer in the next week, I would definitely look to move him, because that's also a position of strength for the Patriots. That's the cornerback's the one position where they have a lot of good bodies.
Check out Ben's work in covering the NFL at bostonglobe.com. Also follow him on Twitter, because he always has the links to his latest work, which is very, very good and insightful. That's at Ben Volin, V-O-L-I-N, senior NFL writer for the Boston Globe. Ben, appreciate you getting up with us this morning, man. Thanks so much for doing it.
All right, D.A., have a great day, buddy.
You too. Ben Volin joining us this morning on the show. I want to play for you audio later on in the show from that press conference on Sunday that had Cam Newton. And I'm going to take a different angle than Ben just had. I think Cam Newton is really struggling confidence-wise, because we have seen Cam, over the course of his career, be as light up the stage, big old smile, I got it type of guy in many, many scenarios. Now, he's not a good loser. He never has been. Witnessed the Super Bowl after the game, being kind of a petulant guy, but he has matured beyond that. That was 5 years ago, 6 years ago. He is certainly more mature today than he was then, and he has handled taking the responsibility, saying the right things very seriously this season with the Patriots. But one thing I can't shake is that watching him answer questions and listening to him answer questions after these losses, he seems like he's a scared freshman in high school, that he's just overthinking and shaking his head and ashamed and embarrassed that he's not living up to his end of the bargain. And I think that that is pressing on him. And we're going to play some of that audio for you coming up later on in the show. Last night, Game 6 of the World Series goes to the Dodgers. And the Dodgers end up clinching their first championship since 1988. So we're talking about that this morning on the show. What a day it was for baseball. They had a World Series champion crowned. They had a controversy with Blake Snell being yanked. And they had a positive test from Justin Turner of the Dodgers. And that's become a huge story this morning, as Justin Turner was removed from the game mid-game and taken away from the team with their on-field celebration initially, but after about an hour, allowed to come back to the field wearing a mask, but took off the mask during parts of the celebration, including to take a picture with the team. So now Turner's taken a lot of heat, and it leaves all types of questions unanswered that maybe we'll get answers to, maybe we won't. But it was like baseball was wheezing to the finish line. How is it possible? The NBA has zero positive tests in a bubble. The NHL has zero positive tests in a bubble. But Major League Baseball has one in Game 6, during Game 6 of the World Series. And they're the ones with fans in attendance, too, remember. Baseball did kind of half bubble. They said players are going to be isolated, but we're going to allow fans in the building. Baseball was walking a very fine line on some very thin ice. And I think what baseball wanted to do was recuperate some of their lost profits by having fans in attendance. I think they knew that was probably better from an atmosphere standpoint as well for TV, for the World Series, their jewel event. And they also, I'm guessing, said, look, we're at the end of the season. If there's some type of outbreak during a World Series game amongst the fans, by the time it's contact traced back to the game, we'll be done with the series anyway. It's a conspiracy theory, I'm sure, but still, baseball is going to have an isolated bubble except fans are allowed to the building. That just seems kind of crazy. You're taking COVID seriously, but you're allowing fans in the building. Okay. So how does that, those two things marry? And then Justin Turner is allowed out of the field celebrating with his teammates. And it's just now going to be baseball nearly got by and navigated it. And now it's going to come down and rain some hellfire on them. Thankfully for baseball and Rob Manfred, their season is over. But that doesn't mean that the questions aren't going to linger into the offseason and over the next couple of days, and I'm sure weeks. When we come back, your best audio of the day. Tim Tebow, once upon a time, was a Jet, and he's got some advice for Trevor Lawrence if he becomes one. We'll hear that as part of Soundcheck next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We start with Tim Tebow, who joined Tiki and Tierney yesterday on what Trevor Lawrence should do in considering his options if the Jets have the number one pick in the draft.
I would really encourage Trevor to find out, how are they going to use you? How are they going to support you? If I was him, I would genuinely try to evaluate everything and look at it with open eyes, because he's so good and he's so talented. He needs a great prospect. He will have leverage.
He will. He does. Because if he doesn't want to play for the New York Jets, there's at least 15 to 18 other teams that would quickly dispatch their own starting quarterback for Trevor Lawrence and a chance to trade into that number one slot. So Lawrence does have leverage. We saw Joe Burrow maybe dance with this last year. We never really heard it from Joe Burrow's camp, but we know that Burrow might not have been completely sold that the Bengals were the perfect destination for him. But look, he ended up going there and seemingly helping turn it around within a matter of weeks. So for Lawrence, if he really is that good, he can be the biggest part of the solution. I think for Trevor Lawrence right now, if he sounds like he's keeping his options open, it's because he knows he has options. Not necessarily that he's coming back to Clemson. I don't think that he would come back, but that he always has the opportunity to use his leverage behind the scenes, his agent, whatever, to manipulate where he wants to go. I mean, it doesn't happen often, but it has happened. Eli Manning, obviously, is the most notable example of this. John Elway did this as well. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. And look, we're a long ways away from what the Jets are going to look like in April. Maybe the Jets are 0-16. Maybe they don't even have the number one pick in the draft. Maybe Adam Gase is nowhere to be found. Maybe they hire a brilliant offensive mind and Lawrence is excited about going there. Maybe there's a new GM. Who knows what happens? But I think Lawrence understands that on October 28th, 2020, going into April, he's well ahead of where he has to declaratively say, I'm playing for the New York Jets. Here is Doug Marrone, head coach of the Jaguars, who's oddly fired up for these final nine games.
And I'm not going to b**** anyone up. I'm kind of fired up. And I know you guys are probably sitting like, what the hell is going on? How could this guy be fired up? They just lost six in a row. You know, and I understand that. I totally do. But, you know, I'm gonna bust my ass, man. I mean, I'm telling you now, I'm you know, I'm going to look at some things. I want to go a little bit outside the box. I mean, I want to, you know, challenge these coaches and challenge these players. I am going to do whatever I can to get the best out of this team and best out of these players. I mean, so, you know, I'm sure people are going to, you know, mock me for that or say whatever the hell they want, but I really don't give a shit. I'm fired up. I'm going to go after it, you know, and, you know, however it falls, but, you know, it's open for me. You know, I've done, you know, crazy before.
I.e., I'm coaching for my job these final 9 weeks of the season. So, I like this salary. I like the paycheck. So, I'm just going to throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. I mean, I love the idea that suddenly Doug Marrone's going to become some creative mastermind and try all these trick plays and gadget looks and everything like that. That sounds amazing to me. I'd love to see the Jacksonville Jaguars try to become the greatest show on turf or revolutionize the defensive side of the football. I want to see all of that. It's like Marrone going, you know what? Fine. I'm going to do everything. I mean, I don't know. We might defer the opening kickoff. Yeah, I might get real creative. Like, first down, we might throw a long on first and 10. Yeah. Seriously, yeah. Second and two, we might throw again. Yeah, you might see us throw again. Uh-huh, that RPO thing, or is it PRO? I don't know what that is. We might try with one of those things, too. Yeah, I'm going to challenge my coaches. Hey, dig into that binder. Find some trick play that you saw in a movie from the 90s and try it. Did you see Any Given Sunday recently? The Replacements? There's got to be something in there we could use. And finally, Ken Carman, who hosts Weekends on CBS Sports Radio, has a scorching hot food take.
People make excuses for sweet potatoes like they make excuses for bad quarterbacks. Well, they got to be in this system. They got to be in that system. Well, you have to play to their strengths. Ken, you have to have them with brown sugar and marshmallows and butter. How about I just have the marshmallows and brown sugar and butter? Why do I have to put crap on it? Why do I have to put sweet potatoes with it? See, now I'm at my whole sweet potato thing and I didn't even want to do it. I'd rather eat regular potatoes off a bathroom floor than have your grandma's sweet potatoes. I'll tell you
wow.
Right now. 855-212-4CBS. Come on. Bring it on. I dare you. Go right on ahead. I'll tell you right now, America. The sweet potato casserole your grandma made, I'd rather throw it out the window than eat it. I wouldn't feed it to my dogs. I only have one. Hate sweet potatoes, man. Well, you haven't had them right. Trust me, I've had them every single way because I tried to like them because I'm supposed to force myself to like them. And when you tell me, well, Ken, once a year. If you're trying to tell me I got to do it once a year, yeah, I got to do my taxes once a year, too. I don't like doing that either.
Ken Carman is also a self-described fat guy, right? He's talked about this. So he knows his food. He's an Ohio guy, so he definitely knows his food. I think for Ken Carman, I got a tough time disagreeing with him there. I think that sweet potatoes are wildly overrated. I think they're fine once a year, Thanksgiving, marshmallows on top. They're fine. But a mashed potato, a French fry, a chips, a wedge, a twice baked. I mean, there's just no comparison. A regular potato thoroughly dominates a sweet potato in every tail of the tape. I got a tough time disagreeing with anything. Now, I wouldn't worry about feeding it to my dog. My dog, any dog, eat anything you put in front of him. I mean, total slop. He's going to eat it. He eats poop. He eats other dogs' poop. He eats his own poop. He smells butts. Obviously, he's going to eat sweet potatoes. But as a human being that has options aside from sniffing other people's butts, I kind of agree. Mraz, where do you fall on this?
I wholeheartedly agree. I never touch sweet potatoes at Thanksgiving.
You don't the fact touch them.
No, and the fact that you even don't know, is it called a yam? Is it called a sweet potato? That throws you off. There are so many better potatoes. In fact, they have only recently, as a recent trend, made French fries out of sweet potatoes because it's the only way to make a sweet potato tolerable. And to Ken's point, if you got to put brown sugar and all this other stuff on it, then how good is it? It can't stand alone. I can eat a mashed potato without gravy. It's a great point by Ken, and you're going to get a lot of these Thanksgiving takes coming. This might be the winner ahead of November.
I'd rather eat regular potatoes off a bathroom floor.
Andrew Bogish, where do you stand on the sweet potato debate?
Yes, a sweet potato fry is acceptable. That is the best vehicle for a sweet potato. But what Sean, you just said, like a mashed potato without gravy is still a mashed potato with butter and other stuff in it. So the comparison would be eating just a potato by itself, which you would always put something on.
No.
Just butter. Because
you make sweet potatoes with butter. If you made just a sweet potato mash with butter and didn't add the brown sugar and anything, it would not taste as good as the mashed potato with butter. Like, that's a standard ingredient to make the mashed potato. The brown sugar and everything is for the topping and texture. Potatoes.
Yeah, you don't need the toppings, but a mashed potato also has plenty of things added to a potato to make it tasty. You wouldn't want to necessarily eat a baked potato out of the, with nothing on it.
I understand that, but his point was the brown sugar and all of that. You don't need to add that to mashed potatoes. That is my point. I want fresh potatoes.
Yeah, but you have to add butter and salt and maybe a little cream.
You need to add stuff to every food. That's what makes food taste good. I mean, you're the same person who hates Cheerios. Why? Because they're plain. What are you guys talking about?
That's not necessary. Well, now we know the real crux of the problem with your diet is that you add something to everything to make it taste good.
So you guys don't season chicken or a burger before eating?
No, of course. Yes, of course you can season things. But I mean, there are some foods that are meant to be eaten without your blue cheese and your bacon bits all over top of it.
Cheese,
croutons.
It's not mashed potatoes with butter. Like, butter is part of the ingredients for the mashed potato to actually exist, is my point. It's not something added extra.
Look,
you can leave the brown sugar and marshmallows off of your sweet potato mash. You don't need to put that on either. But
and
you need
the point
to get
is,
it to be...
it would taste like garbage compared to mashed potatoes tasting like that. With bacon. You guys don't even know what you're talking about.
I think these are shades of gray here. What you're saying is same ingredients, regular potatoes is better than sweet potatoes with the same ingredients. What Bogish is saying is if you just sliced open a potato, a baked potato, and you just sliced open a steamed sweet potato, neither one of them is actually going to be all that enticing.
All right, but that's not the argument. It's just not.
Well, no, the argument
what
is...
What I heard you say was as if mashed potatoes were the thing by themselves that didn't need anything added to them to make them delicious, but they already had butter and other things added to them.
But that's how you make mashed potatoes. When you say mashed potatoes, the butter is implied. When you say sweet potatoes, the butter is implied.
If I just gave you, Mraz, a potato that was in the microwave for a minute and a half and a sweet potato in the microwave for a minute and a half, do you think you'd enjoy either one of them?
No, but I know I've also had baked potatoes with zero topping on it and just being soft in the middle, and I like it.
Okay, so you would eat a potato that had absolutely
nothing.
Right,
you just said yes and no to the same question.
And boiled potatoes I've had, yeah. So yes, around St. Patrick's Day, when you have that overrated meal, I have a bad boiled potato. I don't mind it.
Okay, does Ken Carman have any food takes you disagree with, Moran?
Yes, he thinks Cheesecake Factory sucks. Which, to me... That is as
surprised you guys are friends, though.
As an egregious a take as somebody could have. Cheesecake Factory is the coup de grace of all chain restaurants. I mean, that menu is an unbelievable book. You say I don't read a book? I've read the Cheesecake Factory menu. It's longer than War and Peace. It is unbelievable. To not like Cheesecake Factory is almost like not liking apple pie and vanilla ice cream in America. It's unbelievable.
All right. That was your sound check here on the DA show.
Bacon.
With bacon.
Game 6 of the World Series last night. One of the most controversial managerial decisions in World Series history. Justin Turner pulled out of the game because of COVID, celebrating on the field afterwards. We just spent 6 minutes on sweet potatoes. So, Bogush, get us back on track here. Yeah. Let us know what happened last night in the World Series.
Yeah, it'll be Justin Turner to start. It's kind of the way things should end in this crap year, right? Turner pulled from Game 6 of the World Series. They're testing positive for COVID-19 despite being in baseball's bubble for weeks now in Arlington. Turner was not on the field when the Dodgers claimed the title 3-1 over the Rays. Here's his teammate, Corey Seager.
To have that happen to a guy like that, a dude that's reinvented himself when he came here, what he's meant to this organization, what he's meant to this franchise, what he's meant to this community, and to take that away from him, you know, it's gut-wrenching. You know, it hurts me. I can't imagine how he feels.
Those are all good points, but they don't make it okay that Turner talked or forced his way back onto the field after the official trophy presentation to celebrate with his teammates. They all touched the trophy. There were hugs. There were high fives. Turner took his mask off for a team photo. The Dodgers were to take PCR tests last night and then again this morning. Now, before Turner, the worst decision of the night belonged to Rays manager Kevin Cash. He pulled starter Blake Snell after Austin Barnes won out single in the sixth. Snell had retired 10 Dodgers in a row before that.
That's where I came to the decision. I felt it was best after the guy got on base. Barnes hit the single. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
However, Snell had retired Betts, Seager, and Turner the first two times through, all on strikeouts. The
incredible
top three in the Dodger order was 0-for-6 with 6 Ks against Snell. He had just 73 pitches, but out he came. In came Nick Anderson, and there went a double, a wild pitch, and a fielder's choice. The Dodgers had 2 runs and a lead they did not give up. Betts provided the final score with a solo shot in the eighth. Julio Urias got the final out, as he did in Game 7 of the NLCS. Seager voted MVP like he was in the NLCS.
Yet another Nick Anderson that choked away a championship after all the missed free throws of the 95 NBA Finals. This Nick Anderson just comes in and lights fire to the 1-0 lead.
It is the Dodgers' first title in 32 years. It's number 2 in less than 3 weeks for Los Angeles. Panthers head coach Matt Rhule is hopeful that Christian McCaffrey returns from his high ankle sprain tomorrow against Atlanta. That, though, might be unlikely, but at least McCaffrey is now back at practice. Dez Bryant officially joins the Ravens practice squad. His former club in Dallas is trading defensive end Everson Griffin to the Lions for a conditional 6th-round pick. And NFL Network says the Bengals have told Carlos Dunlap to stay home while they figure out what to do with him, maybe trade him. I don't know that this came up on Monday, but Dunlap shared on social media the Bengals' D-line rotations for Sunday's game ahead of time and then had a temper tantrum on the sideline as the Browns were rallying. He has more than once asked to be traded, and maybe they will be able to do that before Tuesday's deadline.
He's Costanza driving the trophy around the parking lot begging to get fired.
So he's trying to give away the secrets of the defense to his team and visibly unhappy as his team is winning on the sideline.
Yeah, I think he actually was pointing out how bad the rotations were, how bad his D-line coach was. I think that was the point of sharing the paperwork.
Boy, the Bengals have quite cornered the market on just disastrous head case malcontents. They have had so many. The Vontaze Burfict, the Pac-Man Jones, now it's AJ Green and Colin Dunlap that both want out. I mean, man.
Wisconsin QB Graham Mertz reportedly testing positive again for COVID-19, which means he can't play or practice for 21 days. We're still awaiting official word on that, as well as Mertz's backup, Chase Wolfe, who may have also tested positive. That will put the Badgers on QB4, and that's a young man named Danny Vandenboom. Ooh. I don't know how well he's going to play, but I want a guy named Vandenboom on the field for four quarters for Wisconsin as soon as possible.
Wow, Danny Vandenboom and Ben DiNucci starting quarterbacks this week in college football in the NFL. This is exciting.
Vandenboom, Vandenboom, Vandenboom. It's like Mandelbaum, Mandelbaum.
Yeah, that's a great name for a quarterback. Drops the Vandenboom.
Chris Berman would have a field day with that.
Whoop. From the big cheese wheel.
How's he doing, by the way? We checked on him. He's still going?
Yeah. I watched primetime this week. He's going strong.
Camp Randall from the big cheese curd. Vandenboom. Whoop.
By the way, his new best one, Josh Jacobs, Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Oh.
I'm into it. I'm all in on primetime. Whoop. Whoop. Whoop.
Oh. So bad.
That's actually pretty amazing. I might have to give
Josh Vanden lowers the boom. Wisconsin leads 13-6. Had a boom. What's his name? Josh Vandenboom?
No, Danny Vandenboom.
Danny, never a discouraging Vandenboom. Whoop, whoop.
Like one.
So MLS last night, the Seattle Sounders clinched their 12th consecutive playoff appearance with a 2-0 win in Vancouver.
Whoop.
And now you can go back to being Berman.
From the big gravy boat, Vandenboom.
Whoop.
Whoop. Whoop. Whoop. The Badgers.
Whoop.
From the frozen cheese curd, the Badgers. Nick Vanden, lower the boom from Wisconsin.
Whoop.
Stupid. It's so stupid that you can summarize a guy's 40-year career with like 16 total words. That's basically going to be what they're going to do to me in 2030. They're going to be like, with bacon, Mothership Connected. Ha, 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 ha. Great career.
With bacon.
Great career, D.A. With bacon. You want to say that one more time? Really hysterical, you one-note clown.
I can hear the snarky update anchor. He got the great beam me up to the sky last night, Damon Amendolara.
Oh, no. No.
Hashtag zap zap. We got it.
Oh.
We get it.
The mothership has officially landed. Oh.
Yeah. Got that. Disconnected forever.
And DA has finally disconnected for good. R.I.P. Zap Zap. Hopefully he's at the pearly gates with bacon. Back after this.
With bacon.
It's the Connor Green Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, Connor Green's going to be the one laughing at my obit. Yeah, great show, buddy. 32 years on network radio. What'd you give us? A couple of sound effects and a with bacon. That's it. You happy?
With bacon.
And the pride of West Babylon.
Blobs bar. Cheese balls. Oh, yeah, you had a few hot dog eating contests on the air. Real record-breaking stuff there, D.A. You really changed the medium.
Good morning, DA. How are you?
Oh, man, what if salsa actually kills you?
Yeah. Poopy doopy doopy, doopy poopy. Find out years later the after effects of all my internal organs burning up from death by salsa is what did me in. Oh, the irony as Connor Green takes over the radio airwaves.
Josh Jacobs, Jingleheimer Schmidt.
This is how we do it. It's Feeling Green with Connor Green every morning here on CBS Sports Radio. It's Green with Envy right after hours with Amy Lawrence.
He has an update anchor named Kermit.
The con man in the mornings.
Okay. When we come back, a special World Series edition of Champ or Chump. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's Champ or Chump.
Your champ this morning is Mookie Betts. Mookie now has two championship rings, one with the Boston Red Sox and last night with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And Betts was worth every red cent for the Dodgers when they traded for him from the Red Sox and then gave him all of that cash. Because Mookie Betts heads up base running, created the run that helped push the Dodgers into the lead in the sixth inning. His heads-up base running and lead off of third base combined with his speed took home. That was a crucial run. And then another solo home run later on in the game put the icing on the cake and a little cushion for the Dodgers. Mookie, since the trade, did exactly what he was intended to do by the Dodgers. He was brought in to put them over the hump. And the Dodgers, in their roster build, had been very conservative with their spending, drafting and developing a lot of young guys and a cheap core and a young group of guys growing up together, but they needed the superstar. And they traded for Betts because they had the money and because they had the resources to do so, and he did exactly what he was asked to do, deliver the first World Series since 1988. And he did so in impressive fashion. He was a main cog in two runs of a 3-1 win last night to clinch the World Series. Mookie Betts delivered on the promise. He's the champ.
That's DA's champ.
And can you believe that the Boston Red Sox ever felt like he wasn't worth the money? He is the second best player in baseball. He will be for the foreseeable future. He's worth every cent because he's great defensively. He's great on the base paths. He creates runs and scores runs. He's great in terms of hitting for average. He hits for power. He does everything. Why the Red Sox would ever think that he's not worth the cash when, by the way, they're a top three payroll in baseball as it is anybody's guess. Your chump has got to be Rays manager Kevin Cash. He made the decision that will live in infamy forever in Tampa Bay sports lore. To pull Blake Snell last night after just 73 pitches. And as Bogus pointed out in the update, this is what really kills you. The next three batters he was set to face, he had combined to strike them out six times already on the night. The next three batters had gone 0-for-6 with six punch-outs against him up until that point in time. Kevin Cash was definitely guarding against the third time around of the order, where Blake Snell has traditionally struggled. They had a 1-0 lead. They were overly protective of it. But in that moment, with your nose in the books, looking at the metrics, sometimes you got to put the book down and look up into the sky and notice the sunset. And at that moment in time, the Rays were too buried in the books. Nick Anderson comes in, light the lead on fire. Blake Snell exits. He's leading 1-0 with a brilliant effort. By the time that the Rays are back at the plate, they trail 2-1. A devastating turn of events, and Kevin Cash has to own it. That is your chump.
That's DA's chump. Class is now dismissed.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup of two elite teams fighting for division supremacy. Steelers bring their defense against the Ravens for a battle with Lamar Jackson, plus a key AFC East showdown. the Bills and Patriots. Join JB and the guys as they get you set for all of the day's action on the NFL today, starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific Sunday. The NFL is on CBS. And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. Let me know what you think about the decision by the Rays last night to go to Blake Snell or go away from Blake Snell. What did you think about the Dodgers also clinching that World Series in six? Everything that happened in a quirky, crazy World Series in a Game 6, hit me up on the tweets. When we come back, we'll talk about the mental breakdown of Jerry Jones.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.